Welcome. My name is Sebastian. I'm going to talk about load and performance tests in the cloud. And I would like to give a brief overview of what I actually mean by that and why and how you can do performance tests. A little bit about me. My name is Sebastian. Tispa on Twitter and GitHub and the internet. And for the last seven something years, I've done lots of consulting and development work with a strong performance focus on performance and architecture, software architecture, and system architecture. And this ultimately led to the founding of Stormforger now 2.5 years ago, where we build tools and a platform and services, and we offer services around load testing and performance testing, basically HTTP-based systems. And now, before we actually dive into the topic of performance testing and load testing, I would like to define or talk about some of the or give some definitions about some of the basic words that are involved in this topic. And the first one would be performance. And it's quite interesting that performance is often understood in multiple ways and used interchangeably with other terms that we will come to. And I just want to make sure that we are here on the same page what we are actually talking about. So performance is the the ability of a system to fulfill a task within a well-defined dimension. And this is basically efficiency. So the task could be a transaction or a web request or something like that. And the dimension could be time, then we get something like response time. Or it could be memory usage, disk usage, or even money. So you could also define performance in terms of the efficiency, how much does it cost to serve a specific transaction. So the statement like one server can do 250 transactions per second within a defined quality criteria would be a statement of the efficiency of the system or about the performance of the system. This is heavily simplified, of course. And the next term I would like to talk about, which is often used interchangeably with performance, is scalability. And actually, they are not that much the same. They are not really comparable to one another. Where performance was the efficiency of a system to fulfill the task within a defined dimension, scalability, on the other hand, describes the effectiveness on how you can grow capacity of your system by adding resources. So the degree on how effective you are in translating resources into capacity. And if you take the statement from before, like one server does 250 requests per second within a defined quality range, then the statement of 10 servers can do tenfold would be actually very good scalable system. Like 100% of all the additional resources are translated into additional capacity for the system, or throughput in this case. There are different mathematical models and categories to describe scalability, which I won't go into, but just to give you a good distinction of what performance means and what scalability means, because that will become important later on in this talk. So I would like to ask a question that was asked by Jonas Bonner. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. He's the founder and CTO of Lightband, the AKA framework. Maybe someone heard of it. And he gave a presentation, I think many years ago, where he asked two really nice questions. The first one was, how do you know that you have a performance problem? And the answer is, if your system is slow for a single user, then you have a performance problem. I like the sloth. And the next question he asked in this presentation was, obviously, how do you know if you have a scalability problem or a scaling problem? And the answer is, yeah, if your system might be or is fast for a single user, but really slow under heavy load. or high traffic. And this is a really nice visualization of what is the core difference between performance and scalability. Robert Johnson, he was the director of software engineering at Facebook, wrote an interesting article in the Facebook engineering blog also in 2010, I think, where Facebook was really small, like 500 million users. They just reached 500 million users. And he talked about how they do performance optimization projects and scalability improvement projects at Facebook. And he made a couple of really interesting statements. First was that scaling usually hurts performance, so they are contradicting each other. And also that efficiency projects, so efficiency means performance, that efficiency projects rarely give you enough improvement to have a big enough effect on scaling. So they are reaching an area where it is more effective overall to have a better scaling system versus a better performing system. So they are sacrificing efficiency for scalability. And another quote was that efficiency is important too, but they think of it as a separate project from scaling. So they separate this completely. So next up, performance testing. So now we know what performance is and what it is not. And now we take a look at what performance testing actually means. And the best definition, this is a slide completely in English, because the English Wikipedia is much, much better than the German one. And the article on the article on software performance testing, I think it is, has a really, really nice description of performance testing. So when you do performance testing, or it is a testing practice in general, where you determine how a system performs under a particular workload, and you'll take a look at the responsiveness and stability of this of the system that you are testing. And to put it in other terms, they all have in common, or this is a category of testing methods and testing practice, and they all have in common that they all induce a well-defined workload to a system that is under test, or SUT, system under test. And you do that in order to observe the system's behavior and to verify performance-related characteristics, or if you need to guarantee certain service levels, then you can use performance tests in order to verify those characteristics. You also want to do performance tests to simply understand the behavior, the internal behavior of your system that you are testing. There are lots of categories or sub testing methods that could be summarized as performance tests. They are not all very well defined, or it is oftentimes not as simple as it sounds to say, okay, this is a stress test, this is a spike test. It's more about what the goal is that you want to achieve for selecting the right testing methods in your case. But we will go into some of those testing techniques later in this talk. So now we have one final piece to make the talk title complete. We have to talk about this cloud thing. So the cloud. I'm not here to sell you the cloud. I just want to describe what we have by all those cloud vendors that are available to us. We get basically infrastructure as a service. So we get networks, compute, storage, and all those things. We get a platform as a service sometimes. But the most important thing is that we get APIs and automatization across all those services and components. And we get this on demand, which makes it really easy to achieve a cost-effective and scalable system. So now to the actual topic. So what about performance tests in this cloud? And you could now ask the question, why is this now relevant? Because I just told you that the cloud is scaling for you. You just buy more stuff swipe your credit card once more and boot up more servers, whatever. And the obvious problem with that is that scaling resources doesn't necessarily mean to scale an application. This is only true if you are if you have a very well-defined system and software architecture that powers your entire application. And to give you a really, really stupid and simple example how this isn't true, or this, no, might skip that. So maybe you're running in the AWS cloud, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but it doesn't really matter. Maybe you have an automatic load balancer that scales automatically for you, which is great and fine. There are pitfalls there as well, but in general, you're good. Then you have your applications or web server tier that you have provisioned in an auto scaling group, which means that it will automatically add more resources to your problem if you have a higher throughput or higher load on your system. And then, of course, you have some sort of a persistence layer maybe behind that. And if you have this scaling well, and only one master server, for example, then your thing will break eventually. So it is maybe a too simple example, but just to give you an idea that you just can't ramp up your resources and get automatically more capacity out of the system. If you are a bit familiar with the cloud services that are available today, then you might think of, what about all those fully managed services that you get from them, where the provider actually cares about everything? You just say what you need and how much you need, and you pay for it, and they manage basically all the provisioning of the resources below that higher level service. Examples for that would be AWS Lambda or the Google Compute equivalent. I think it's called Functions, but I'm not really sure. There is this DynamoDB database and data store and data and event streams and queues and everything. And those services aren't really resources, but they are higher level services that are managed by the cloud provider for you. So in this case, what is the problem with that? And basically, it boils down to complexity. And complex systems are, oh God, what is Wechselwirkung in English? I have no idea. If systems interact with each other in a high degree, then they are complex. And this is something that I've taken from the physics area. So the problem is complexity. And the complexity hasn't simply vanished. It's not like that magically you are moving from your on-premise data center to the cloud and everything is simple and easy. It might be easier to get started and to build more sophisticated systems, but in the end, either you have some additional complexity there, or your provider is managing the complexity for you. So most of it, or some of the complexity, is hidden, and other complexity is it has shifted from your side and from your operations team, for example, to the teams at AWS and Azure and whatever. But it turns out that this complexity often has a non-trivial impact on performance characteristics of your system. And this is especially true for all those fully managed services that are available. And the only thing that you can do to deal with this complexity is building up a good understanding on what you are actually dealing with. And first of all, you have to know your own application, your own software architecture and system architecture that you are responsible for, that you are designing in terms of performance characteristics. System software architecture, and you also need to know your runtime environment. And in this example, it would be the cloud runtime environment that you are using. And this also extends to all those services that you are utilizing, for example, from the AWS cloud or from any other cloud vendor, and all those other third-party vendors that you are using, I don't know, logging as a service, database as a service. There are so many as a service things that you could possibly use. And you need to have a basic understanding, at least a basic understanding, what is happening there when you have a certain traffic scenario or load scenario on your system. So, and this is quite obvious that you, of course, need also conduct performance tests and load tests and all those kinds of testing in the cloud. And I would like now to go briefly over some of the more important testing methods and take a look at what they actually mean and what you can achieve with those and what is particularly important when it comes to doing looking at the cloud.
You said we have to build understanding what's going on.
Yeah.
I fully agree with that. But the problem with all this cloud stuff is that they try to make fog.
They make fog.
So we cannot understand in ABS what's exactly going on.
Yeah. Let me quickly repeat the question and then move the discussion later on. The question was in the how can you build up an understanding of a system that is not open, right? Is it or visible or okay? Now, but let's skip this discussion to later. Okay, first off, we have load testing, which is maybe the simplest and it's the simplest form of a performance test. Where you induce a normal or an expected workload to your system, and you want to take a look at the latency, at the throughput, or error rates, or whatever criteria that is important to you. And you usually do that in order to verify non-functional requirements or to see if you are able to hold your service level agreements. But that's basically what I want to say about load testing. The other testing methods are a bit more interesting. Stress testing, for example, is basically a load test, but you are now explicitly going beyond the normal or expected workload that you expect to see on your system, and you do that to see how the system behaves at its design limits, for example, or when you you want to understand how your system behaves at those limits, and you can also utilize stress testing or a series of stress testing to figure out what the capacity of your system actually is. You can increase the traffic over time and then see the point when you violate your quality criteria, or maybe when your system eventually doesn't serve any requests at all because the server died or so. I just told you that you have to define quality criteria, but that's basically the same with a load test. And then you steadily increase the traffic in multiple phases, for example, and you see when and you take a look at when you are hitting the or when you are violating the quality criteria that you defined before. Right. And when you conduct a stress test, it's really important to have a deep look at, or you have the ability to have a deep look at your system. So you should have all your monitoring tools and profiling tools available so that you can actually learn something when you are inducing the traffic into your system. And you can use a stress test not only to see what the capacity is, obviously, but you can also start to identify the next bottlenecks, for example, if you want to push the boundary even further. And so you need to have some data and idea where to look next in order to improve the performance of your system. And it's a good tool, like I already said, to determine the capacity per resource. So you can do a stress test and just use one application server, for example, and then see how much users or how much requests or how much acts you can handle using that particular resource. And with that idea in mind, you can basically do a scalability test. You can now change the perspective on to how effectively can you translate more resources into more capacity to your system, more requests per second, more users, and so on. And this is basically the foundation for capacity planning and cost estimation, because you are maybe a fancy startup or so, and you haven't even launched a product, but you have a hockey stick growth, and you know that you have, I don't know, tenfold the users per month or so. Then you need to know what will it cost in order to handle this scenarios, these growth scenarios. And what you do for scalability testing is basically a series of stress tests where you say, okay, you have maybe five resources, like five servers, and you measure when do you begin to violate your quality criteria. And in this case, it's, I don't know, 170 capacity, maybe requests per second, or concurrent users, or connections, it doesn't really matter. And then you add more resources, maybe more application servers, and then you get maybe roughly the double the throughput, and then you do it again, add more resource, and over time, most certainly it will flatten out. And this is now a good basis to see, okay, maybe we just need to go in that area, and we are basically good because it works as we expect it to work. We have almost linear growth, perfectly fine. But if we need to go here, then we might have a problem, and we might actually need to act immediately to fix this scenario. To give you a comparison, I initially talked about performance versus scalability, and that Facebook actually separates this into two different project areas. So what now? What will happen if you increase the performance by 10%? Then you will get something like that, basically the same curve but 10% higher. But what happens if you fix the scalability problem? Then you maybe in the beginning it's more or less the same, but the more you grow or the more resources you add, the more impact does a scalability project have on performance. And I'm not saying that you should only focus on scalability, because most of us don't really run such a big system that this will really be a problem. But it is important to see the difference, so that you actually know what you are aiming for when you are working on performance or scalability. Next up, we have spike testing. And spike testing is trying to answer the question, how does your system behave under extreme load spikes? And you want to know, can you utilize the elasticity of the cloud good enough, and can you react fast enough to sudden changes in the traffic pattern that you are seeing at your system? There are several reasons where you have where you can actually plan those scenarios. For example, the marketing division has a crazy idea to send a push notification to 500,000 users at the same time, and maybe you want to prepare for such a scenario or talk them out of it to distribute it more over the day, or you have a mailing campaign or advertisement spot on TV or stuff like that. Or maybe you are about to release a big feature, and maybe the marketing division says, oh, this will go viral 100%, and then you need to be prepared for those scenarios. And basically what you are doing is you are running a load test, but you compress the traffic to a very sharp spike, essentially, and you are then taking a look at how good can you absorb this spikes, where does your system fail first, how does it fail, which is really good information, especially when you are in this situation that your ops people actually know what to do and how to mitigate maybe such a sudden increase in traffic. Then we have soak testing, sometimes also called endurance testing, which is kind of like the opposite of a spike test, where you basically want to know how your system behaves under a very under a maybe normal load situation, but for a very long long time. And this is basically a long load test. The definition of long is up to you basically, but normally it means many hours, maybe even days. That kind of depends on what application you're looking at. If it's an application that you are only deploying once a quarter, then maybe you want to run a longer test because you know that your systems are running for longer periods of time. But if you are, I don't know, crazy deploying like 50 times a day or so, then maybe it's not that important to ensure that you can run the system for many days without any memory leaks or disks spilling up or whatever. And it's also quite nice to do performance troubleshooting, maybe in that area. I worked on an advertisement server, and we had a really strange situations where, for I don't know, one days or two after a deployment, we suddenly see strange CPU spikes on those ad servers, and then we basically did a artificial test that was aimed to look at a specific code path, and then we just hammered it for like 10 hours or so, made many billions of requests, and then finally saw what the problem is. And this is what I meant by those testing methods aren't really clearly distinguished. It's kind of a soak test, but it's also kind of a performance troubleshooting test. Get the idea. Okay, next up is the most important testing methods when it's when it comes to the cloud, and this is configuration testing. And configuration testing now changes the perspective to what kind of changes do you see in the observable behavior of the system when you are changing the environment. Normally you are not changing the environment, but you're changing the test, and now you are actively changing the system that you are testing, and run the same test over and over again to get a comparison between multiple sets of configurations. Can we do this? I will come to that. Give me a minute. So this implies that you have to do a series of tests, obviously, because with one test you can't compare anything to something. It is a really nice technique to learn about the environment that you are running in. And to give you some examples, what I'm actually talking about when I talk about configuration, when we go from top to bottom in the cloud, this would be starting with instance types, for example. You have compute optimized, memory optimized, I/O optimized, and whatever instance types. You have different sizes and burst performance and normal performance and whatever. And this is, I think, the most practical example on what you want to do when you are running in the cloud and you want to do a performance configuration test. Maybe you want to do it to increase the throughput, but maybe you also want to do this in order to get roughly the same throughput, but at a much lower lower cost, which would be optimizing the cost efficiency in that regard. Then we have many other services. I just took a couple of examples here. Autoscaling configuration, for example, where you have to define scaling. You basically define a group of servers, and then you define scaling policies, when to add more resources, how long to wait before adding even further resources, when to scale down, how long does it take to boot up those new instances before they become available. There are many parameters that go into how to configure and how to deal with an autoscaling group that you maybe want to know how this behaves if you are actually using it beyond reading the documentation and clicking buttons in the UI. Then there is throughput provisioning. And what I mean by throughput provisioning are those managed services that I talked about earlier, where you basically say, okay, I want to have this event stream. I need, I don't know, 20 megabits of throughput there. You can roughly model it against your business logic, but sometimes you forget to model bugs, for example, and then you see that you are injecting. Oh, I'm sorry. The main problem is you forget to model issues that are not there by design, and you should always go ahead and run a dynamic test to figure out if you are actually right about your assertions there. And the next point would be are you using those services that are offered by your cloud environment or maybe by other vendors? Are you using them in a right or optimal way? There are not only in the cloud, but basically everywhere, many pitfalls that you can take when you just start to look at how those services and systems behave under load. And the list goes on, obviously. This is not so much more cloud specific, but you have the hypervisor most of the time when you run on a virtualized environment. And even on AWS, you have some little knob here. When it comes to the hypervisor that you can decide. Then you have the operation system level, obviously, network tuning, kernel tuning, all those settings that are available to us. You have your web server, application server stack, where there are many configuration options, versions, dependencies that you can compare to one another, but also software configuration, I don't know, like database, connection pools, timeouts, and so on and so forth. And also maybe even software dependencies, even things that you just use but don't manage by yourself can have a significant impact on the performance of your system. And with a configuration test, you can simply compare one version to another version or one TLS library to another TLS library and stuff like that. Configuration testing is actually something that we do 100% of the time when we do consultant work for our customers. So this is the most important technique to help them to improve their performance characteristics. Next up is something that I haven't found in this term actually, but I'm not sure if I missed something. I like to call it availability or resilience testing. This is a little bit inspired by the principles of chaos engineering. I don't know if you heard about them. It's from Netflix. They published a manifesto, I think, where they all talk about how to really make sure that your system is as resilient as possible. But anyhow. All those things I talked before are things that you have directly under control. Maybe you have also under control when and how you deploy, but most of the time you forget that sometimes you have to deploy even when your system is under heavy load. For example, if you need to roll out a hotfix because something is broken. And maybe you want to do that without downtime. And then you have to ask the question, are you really sure that you can run a zero downtime deployment under heavy load? And this is something you should also at least think about testing and verifying those processes. The next thing is that when you're running in a cloud environment, you basically are confronted with constant changes to your infrastructure. There are some automated tools that spin up new servers and shut them down again. Maybe you need something like a service discovery tool, and you want to. And are you really sure that you see the changes fast enough so that you don't run into any problems there? So these are all those scenarios do happen all the time, but most of the time it is simply forgotten that you should not only try this out on your dev environment and see, okay, the new server is booting up and the service is available and everything is good, But yeah, things suddenly change if you are seeing a lot of load on your system. And the list goes on for failure scenarios and failover, verifying that your failover mechanisms are actually working. What is happening if the, I don't know, network connection to your caching server gets slow or drops packets, or one of the database read slaves suddenly dies. So do you, are you able to cope with those scenarios when you are confronted with a high traffic scenario? Yeah. Okay. Then I would like to raise a question. So is this any different to what we actually did or had to do before we were able to run those in the cloud and don't have to care about these servers ourselves anymore? And I would clearly answer this question with Jain. I think that the requirement and the testing methods haven't really changed. Basically, it have been around for decades. Everyone knows what performance tests and load tests and such things were a long time ago. But what has really changed is the abilities or the possibility to run those tests in the cloud context. And the most important thing here to keep in mind is that test environments are something that is really interesting when you take a look at the cloud and what the cloud actually provides you with. If you really utilize all these APIs and automation possibilities, then suddenly it becomes really easy to provision test environments, not QA environments, but really production-grade performance test environments, or maybe even scaled beyond the performance the production environment to see if you can handle larger traffics. And by test environment, I mean everything from infrastructure, service configuration, code deployments, everything. If you are able to automate this, then it might be really easy to spin up a performance test environment in the morning, and I don't know, maybe you have to wait 1 hour or so to load all the data into the environment, but then you have an environment that you can actually work and play with. And if you do that correctly, then you can do this a lot more cost effective and more flexible than we were used to do it. I have a more quick question. Is someone working in an environment where you have one perf test environment where you can run like a quality, like a QA environment for performance? One hand, two hand, three? Okay, so you have, okay, do you have three environments, more or more than three environments? Two? Is he? Four, ah, nice. Okay, so yeah, the problem usually is that performance environments that are capable of handling this traffic and are comparable to a production environment are really expensive because you just have to buy lots of resources to mirror the production environment. And if you now have to do this like two, three, four and more times, it gets even more expensive. And it is quite a mismatch because you have now these days this pizza-sized teams, like maybe 10 of them, and then you have to wait in order in line before you can actually do your performance test of your feature or your product or your service that you are launching. And I know it's really hard, and maybe it's just a vision, but imagine that you can provision such an environment on demand for the period of time that you need it for, and then shut it down afterwards and save lots of money and time to manage and keep the systems up and running 24/7, even if you're not using them 24/7. Okay, but there's one remaining problem or one challenge, which is the ability to reproduce your test environment perfectly. Even though if you can automate all those provisioning steps like creating the infrastructure, networks, firewall rules, and servers and services, you have this little nasty thing called state in your system. You have product databases, for example, but you also have a state in terms of caches or file system caches, application. There are many, many areas where you have state in your system. And for me, it's a pretty much an unanswered question: how can you deal in an elegant way so that you can set your system in a state that is a good starting point to make comparable performance tests? And how do you manage those test data? It's quite a challenging task, at least from our experience. It's not so clear if you can use production data, if you have to use fake data, is it comparable to production data, is it too optimistic, too pessimistic? There are many challenges on how to create or deal with test data and how to manage it. Maybe data schemas changes for one feature, and then you have to have a good mechanism in order to how to apply those data so that it stays comparable from one environment to another environment. And how do you automate all those state handling and data handling problem? I don't have a good answer for that. I'm happy to hear what you think about it. I'm almost done. A quick recap. So I talked about that resources or scaling resources is not the same as scaling applications. I think that most important thing why this is still the case is simply complexity. It's still there. It's maybe hidden from us. And the only way out of this problem is building up a better and good understanding on how our systems behave. And I would like to encourage you, if you are already running stuff in the cloud, then think about doing the same work that you do in provisioning your production environments and just try to apply this for performance testing environments as well. And in the end, you want to have the cycle, right? It's not only for software engineering or development, but it should also apply on all those non-functional criteria that we have just talked about. So you want to design something, you want to implement it, maybe not in code, but maybe in infrastructure. You want to measure it, you want to validate it, and you want to do it over and over again. And this would be the end. Thank you.
So many hosting providers are switching from renting servers to renting services. So when I rent a service and performance varies every day, so what can I do for testing in this case?
So the question is hosting providers are switching from servers to services, right? And you see, or you...
Yeah, I rent not a server, I rent a database.
Yeah. And you actually see a fluctuation in the performance of the services. Is that okay? And how can I answer that? What was the actual question? Sorry.
What can I do in these cases? So just use special testing tools or?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Monitoring. Okay. So you are now going from renting a server to renting a database, a managed database, and you fear now that the quality or the performance of the system isn't as stable as it used to be by renting a server and managing the database yourself, right? Okay, so I think it doesn't really matter what kinds of tools you're using. It's not that there is any difference from perf testing your own server with the database that you manage versus the database that you basically rent. because in the end, it's a database. You can talk to it just the same. So you can basically use the same tools to do that. Your statement that you are seeing different performance characteristics of those systems is a good argument for running these performance tests in the first place, because you want to see these performance differences. For once, you could tell your database provider that hey, every night in this time range the performance degrades. What is happening on your end? You can prove it because you have a series of tests, or maybe you are having some configuration problems, or you can do some configuration tuning, which would be the case for configuration tests where you compare multiple settings, or maybe you can provision more or less resources to your managed database. So that would be the ground from where you build up to get a better understanding on how your managed database behaves. I'm not sure if that answered. Okay.
Handling spikes in cloud. Like, we are already implementing a solution which gives a particular MQTT response during those times, but is it good to augment auto scaling with some sort of reserve capacity for these situations, or how do you generally deal with spikes? And you can't predict them.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes you can. Or the question is, how do you actually deal with traffic spikes in the in a cloud environment? And if you should go for auto scaling versus, or maybe even combined with over provisioning, so that you have enough capacity. The other comment was that most of the time you can't really predict a traffic spike. This is true. Sometimes it is true, especially when we are asked to test things, because customers plan big marketing campaign or coordinated cross media campaign. Then you can sort of guess what the traffic spike will look like if it really happens. Otherwise, you can't really fully prepare for that, because it's a big unknown. If you are expecting such a traffic spike, then most of the cases solely relying on autoscaling won't really work in my experience, because it's really hard to get all those scaling policies right and to optimize your server images in a way that they actually boot up really fast and are ready and in service fast enough. So, and you really, at least for AWS, this is the case. You see that all those services at AWS are more designed to run on a bigger scale. You have not only one instance per availability zone, but multiple ones, and you have to have some degree of free capacity of headroom in order to absorb the incoming wave and to give you more time to spin up more instances. And if you are expecting such a spike, you can basically prepare for it and just ramp up your desired capacity a little bit so that you can absorb the traffic better. And otherwise, I'm not really there is no general solution, no perfect general solution to that particular problem, actually.
Sure. So, that's kind of strange, because I thought that your ideas about checking the scalability. So, if I know my system can scale, I can do something like Ethers,
select
the system, start from other services. And then the next question is for Claudia mentioned. Epic. So, how valuable are the metrics I get from monitoring on uptime, for performance monitoring, for performance
measurements?
If I've got a system where my machine is alone, it's something completely different.
Yeah.
If I've got some other users scanning up their system.
This is a, okay. Yeah, okay. You are, let me check if I can summarize the question. You are having trouble with the argument that you can do run or that you should run performance tests against the cloud if you have an environment that is changing, and not only because you are changing it, because the provider itself is, or other customers that are using these infrastructure are having an influence on your system as well, right? So the noisy neighbor problem, for example, and stuff like that. Okay. This is quite interesting. I get this question actually a lot. There are some ground rules. I'm particularly familiar with AWS. I'm not so sure about all the other cloud environments out there, but for AWS, I can say that if you avoid some very basic stupid ideas like using these micro instances for your production traffic, for example, that they can have, or what was it called? I think. Credits, CPU credits or so. So for a short amount of time, they can do a lot better in terms of CPU performance. And then for the rest of the hour, you are throttled to a lower level. This is in general a really bad idea. But most of the time, the noisy neighbor problem is actually not such a big thing if you are using instance sizes that are typical for the production environment. So, for example, when it comes to network performance, we utilize the AWS network quite a lot because we are running tests from a couple megabit per second to double digit gigabits per second range. And we rarely see any fluctuation or big fluctuation in the network performance or packet performance, actually. So if you are using HVM virtualization, for example, and use the correct settings on your servers, we rarely see a big change in the general performance. If you are running I don't know, a mission critical stock exchange application, then maybe you don't want to run it in the cloud in the first place. But for most of the applications that are running, it is quite was heißt vorhersagbar? The performance is quite predictable for this cloud environment, at least for those mature providers. And this is at least our observations and the observations of our customers. So that would make it quite comparable, at least within a specific margin of error. You have other experience when it comes to that? Okay, yeah. You looked a bit skeptical, so. Normally, or one more thing I like to add is, normally the biggest performance issues are problems that are configuration based and just development stuff, engineering stuff, bugs that were introduced into the systems. So normally you have to work through a lot of stuff before you actually reach the area where you need to look at the underlying network performance.
Yeah. Mentioned the instance sizing and everything before,
yeah.
And but as you just mentioned, it's actually more difficult to do on those underlying
configurations
and then
the. So the question is about the order in which to perform those methods. But the order is, not strictly speaking. Normally we just do a quick load test to start, just to see roughly if you reach the area that you were actually aiming for, and then it highly depends. If you are good, then we run a scalability test directly to see, or a series of stress tests to determine the capacity and to see if your system scales beyond your limit. This is most of the time customers' request when they are running on the cloud. And then configuration testing is often used as a troubleshooting or debugging tool, or to quickly verify that the change you are making in order to optimize the performance, because you saw on the load test that you have a big problem here and you have an idea and you prototype it and apply it, then you want to do basically a configuration test with the one version, maybe versus the feature branch that you're testing. And if you are using a tool like WeBuild, then you just hit a play button, run the test again, and just compare these things to one another. But yeah. Even though I said that configuration testing is the most important and interesting thing, most of the time it isn't really that what we do first, because you have to see if you are hitting your goal at least roughly.
What are some of the tools you commonly use to do your
Most obviously, I use my own tool most of the time, and I'm pretty familiar with Zung, which is an Erlang-based performance testing tool. I have to look into JMeter from time to time because customers are using it. JMeter, yeah, and yeah, there are lots of other tools out there, but in the end, it doesn't really, I have to be careful because the sales guys are hating me for that. It doesn't really matter what tool you are using, at least not at first, because it's much harder to get an idea on what you want to learn, what you want to test, how you want to test, how do you organize those tests, who is responsible for testing, who should be present when you are doing a larger test. Those are all things that are much harder to start with compared to picking the ideal tool for your solution or automating it to the last extent. So I would say it is more important to get started quickly and to have the first the first results quickly, so that you can iterate on that. And if you need to switch the tool, or if you are happy with the tool, it's something that, at least from my experience, comes a little bit later. Okay. Was war mit your question, or was it answered? Okay. Okay. Yeah. Thanks.